today I want to talk about balance. We'll have to do a small experiment before I begin. So I need a few volunteers. What we're going to do is try to stand on one foot, okay? And try to balance. So, any volunteers? Let's try that. So, grab your foot right here and see if you can stand like this. Nice. Now, tilt to your right 30 degrees. No, in that plane. Or to your left 30 degrees. This way. In that way, yeah. Well, actually, the point I'm trying to make is in order to be balanced, we have to be in the center. Yeah. Physically speaking, at least for now, you know, to keep that body in the center, neither you can go too much to the left nor too much to the right. You have to constantly bring it to the center. And what is that center in terms of the body?
Center of gravity.
Center of gravity. You have to constantly align the body with the center of gravity. Is it possible that same is true with mind? That there is some center there where we have to bring the mind to a center. Just like for the body, it was the center of gravity. There is that center there for the mind. What is it? What is that center?
Equanimity.
Neti-neti. Okay. Yeah. We have to constantly avoid deficiency, avoid excess, and bring the mind to that core, that center, which you said equanimity. That's what makes the mind balanced. You know, many people talk about being in the middle, right? There you are. You must have heard this phrase, right? The middle way, be in the middle, you know? What is that middle? It's not a qualitative middle, like 50 between 0 and 100. It's not a qualitative center. Sorry, it's not a quantitative center, right? 50 is the quantitative midpoint between 0 and 100, right? Being in the middle means qualitatively being in the middle. What is that qualitative core, that middle way? It is equanimity. And that's how balance arises. And balance of mind, equanimity, is the most sublime quality of mind. And that's what we try to cultivate here through the meditations we do. In the second phase of meditation, where you moved your attention from top to bottom, bottom to top, and noticed different feelings, and your aim was not to develop craving for pleasure or aversion to pain, right? So in a way, you were trying to bring the mind constantly to the center. You were constantly trying to balance the mind. That's exactly what you were doing. Just like as he was falling, he was trying to bring his body to the middle, right? Now imagine doing that in the realm of the mind. That's exactly what we are doing. Avoiding craving or avoiding attaching to pleasure, as well as avoiding pushing away pain, right? Bringing it, balancing it, diligently, constantly, ardently, moment to moment. So that's the beauty of the practice, to develop balance. Whenever, you know, there is an issue of avoiding craving and aversion, or avoiding liking or disliking, or whenever the issue of equanimity comes, you know, or the topic is discussed, there is always this question, you know, are we becoming insensitive or indifferent, you know? Especially when we are dealing with other people, right? We like that attachment, right? We like to be passionate about somebody and be attached and things like that. So there's always that question. And it's a valid question, you know. But as we practice and as we understand what it really means, then all those questions go away, you know. That balance of mind, equanimity, is not about becoming indifferent or apathetic. It's about transcending. You know? It's about going higher, becoming larger, bigger, expanding. You know? That's what it really means. You will notice that as the balance of mind is cultivated, more and more there will be neutrality. The neutrality will arise. You will no longer love one person more than another. You will love all as equal, you know. There will no longer be any enemies. You know? We have friends and we have enemies, right? When there is that balance of mind, there is that neutrality, and then there are no friends, no enemies.
So, what is this renunciation?
Right, so, yeah, so I'm going towards that. Yeah. So, there was a Tibetan monk who was asked, well, you talk about equanimity, isn't China your enemy, you know? And the monk said, China is my frenemy, friendly enemy. And it's possible to look at your worst enemy as your friend. It really is possible if we develop that equanimity, balance, neutrality. And it's especially possible if we practice that meditation we do here. And then, in addition, we have to practice, you know, loving kindness, compassion, gladness. Loving kindness means considering every being worthy of our love and kindness. Every being, no matter who that is, maybe your worst enemy. And this is not just a philosophical perspective, it's a very pragmatic way of developing equanimity, balance of mind. So we practice loving kindness towards others. We practice compassion, which means understanding suffering in yourself and in others, and then having a desire to alleviate that suffering. That's compassion. We practice gladness towards others. Deriving joy from others' success. appreciating others' success, becoming non-competitive, appreciative joy, that's gladness. So as we practice these qualities, loving kindness, compassion, gladness, it's the law of nature that your mind will stop wandering to the left or wandering to the right. It will automatically settle down in that center, that qualitative core, which you call balance. Mm-hmm. Automatically, that's the inherent nature of mental phenomena. Other things we can do to develop equanimity is avoiding simple things like avoiding company of prejudiced people, politically opinionated people, spending more and more time with wise people. And we talked about that during your discussion on how to develop a contemplative lifestyle, if you remember. Simple things like that, being skillful in our socialization, becoming non-opinionating, avoiding over-enthusiasm. I was almost going to say avoiding passion. That one is misunderstood quite a bit. If we practice compassion, you'll automatically avoid passion. That I can guarantee you. So avoiding over-enthusiasm, avoiding passion, constantly inclining the mind towards neutrality, secluding ourselves from mundane worldly matters, and constantly bringing the mind, inclining it towards neutrality. Neutralizing our perception and cognition, things like that. When I say neutralize our perception, I mean, for example, you may have an old acquaintance whom you don't like maybe 30 years ago something happened and you're really mad at that person, could be your friend or your cousin even, you know, family, and then after 20, 30 years you meet that person. How do we perceive him or her? We still perceive him as somebody who is a jerk, you know? I've done that in the past. That you know somebody from the past, and that somebody has been bad to you, and then you meet that person after like years, and then you still think about that person the same way. You still perceive that person the same way. So every event of perception is neutralized. Every act of cognition is neutralized. It's constantly bringing it to that core, that center. So that's what we do to develop that sublime quality of balance.
I have a question. I don't mean to split hair here. When we talk about, you know, being in the center, so you are developing an attachment to being in the center, a non-attachment to everything that is non-center, the good, the bad, kind of aversion towards good, aversion towards bad. But you're developing an attachment towards the equanimous.
That's actually a very good question. Actually, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's very important to understand that equanimity or balance of mind or the core, the center of mind, it's like the horizon of the earth. If you try to reach it, if you try to get to it, if you try to achieve it, you can never achieve it. Because the more you run towards it, the more the horizon runs away from you, right? And that's why we never directly practice equanimity or balance. Don't practice it directly. In fact, if you do, it will lead to what you're saying. So what you do is you practice everything that leads to equanimity. What is that everything? Loving kindness, compassion, gladness, neutrality. Things like that.
So it just happens. Equanimity
happens. Correct.
You don't reach there, you find yourself.
That's why it's called an epiphenomenon. Balance of mind is an epiphenomenon. It arises out of everything else that we do. So those who practice balance directly, they find it very confusing and very hard. And they find it painful, because it will lead to apathy, it will lead to denial, it will lead to indifference. So practice everything else and let the mind settle down in the center. So thanks. And how do we know that we are going to the center? How do we know that the equanimity is arising?
Peace.
Right. We know it by noticing what is happening to us. You know, the more we practice balancing the mind, the more there will be ease in our life. The more there will be a sense of contentment, renunciation. But I don't like to use that word because it also has that
negative
connotation. But those are the things, blissfulness and ultimately peace. The more we are experiencing peace, the more we are settling down in the center, the more we are coming to the middle. So that's how we know that equanimity or balance is arising.
You can also know how much better you feel. I had a good example of this. I had this, you know, thought that I'm sort of the outsider with my views of the world, with some of my more intimate people, like family. And sometimes we've gotten into arguing and conflict, and I made a decision that I was not going to go there. And I had an example where I was having a conversation with one of my sisters, and she started to go there, and I just let it slide right by me. And I felt so much better about the abuse that I let it slide by.
You let go?
I did not react.
Wonderful. Yeah, so that sense of non-reaction,
mm-hmm.
letting go,
mm-hmm.
which is what we practiced in the beginning of the, those are all indications that the mind is settling down in the middle.
I think those that are inner activities or life are probably the best laboratory. Are probably the best laboratory for us.
Oh.
Those are real close to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
The best lab.
Yeah, when you're sitting with your family at the dinner table, that's your litmus test. Absolutely. They provide the best opportunity. Great. Any questions? Comments?
I have a question on impermanence, the practice, the contemplation of impermanence. There's so many things that are impermanent. Most of the things, almost everything is impermanent. So if what we see what we have is impermanent. How are we going to use that to understand what is permanent? Because if there is something that is permanent, and you're hoping to understand that, what do you understand it with when everything is impermanent?
Right, so
it's
a tough one. It's a fundamental question. As we notice, whatever happens in our life, right? Everything, the bodily phenomenon, the mental phenomenon, the phenomenon of consciousness, everything that happens, the more we notice its impermanence. And so far, is there anybody here who has experienced permanence in their life experiences? Anybody? Whatever has happened to us, whatever we have experienced, has come and gone. That's the inherent nature of all the phenomena in the realm of existence. But there is one thing that always persisted. There is one thing that was permanent, that is permanent. Awareness.
Mm-hmm.
That which noticed the impermanence
mm-hmm.
always is there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That which cognized the impermanence is there. That's called awareness. So, the more we establish in the understanding of impermanence, the more awareness arises. And that's what basically the answer to your question. Permanence cannot be objectively noticed, meaning here you are and there is permanence. You can objectively notice impermanence, but permanence is non-objective, non-subjective. So when you are completely established in awareness, pure consciousness, awareness, then you are abiding in the experience of permanence.
So,
but that can arise only if there is a foundation of equanimity. Equanimity is the absolute foundation for, if you are pursuing enlightenment or mental perfection, whatever it may be, foundation is balance, equanimity.
So awareness doesn't have an observation, nor does it have an observer. Is that true?
Right. The observer, that which is observed, and the process of observation, it's all one. That's why it is called awareness. Well, great. So we can continue for forever because these are very interesting topics. So we will, what I suggest is we'll have lunch now. And then after lunch, we generally sit at the fireplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend bringing up the issue of balance again and then having a noble conversation about that. And I'll keep,
mm-hmm.
I'll listen and everybody share their thoughts and experiences. So we'll continue our noble conversation upstairs. Thank you.